The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, "We're Not for Sale. WakeMed Navigates Medicaid Cuts, Competitive Pressures in Bid to Stay Independent." And the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, "System-Wide Persistence, How WakeMed is Remaining Independent and Competitive in a Rapidly Changing Healthcare Market." And this is written by Zach Ezzone. As most health systems throughout North Carolina are focused on geographic expansion, WakeMed Health and Hospitals is doubling down on investing in Wake County. And as consolidation increases throughout healthcare, WakeMed is focused on remaining independent. Donald Gintzig, the president and CEO of WakeMed, gets calls every year asking whether the hospital system would consider a sale. Each time he gives the same answer. "My number one response is, and it's our board's response, is, we're not for sale," Gintzig said. WakeMed will partner with other organizations where it may be beneficial, but the health system is advancing its own ambitious plans to spend hundreds of millions to grow its footprint and bring more services to Wake County. This includes expanding its three existing hospitals in Raleigh and Cary while building out a new medical campus in Garner. The health system also has physicians' offices, urgent care centers, and freestanding emergency departments throughout Wake County. "We're in one of the fastest growing places in the country, and that's the first place I want to invest," Gintzig said. As it grows, WakeMed is also facing challenges related to the competitive healthcare landscape and changes in federal and state law that could limit future funding streams. But Gintzig isn't fazed. He has led WakeMed through numerous obstacles since joining 12 years ago after retiring from the U.S. Navy and serving as acting deputy Surgeon General of the Navy. "Throughout my career, the world is supposed to have come to an end a lot, and it rarely does," Gintzig said. Finances and mission. Gintzig joined WakeMed at a challenging time as health systems around the country were grappling with changes related to the Affordable Care Act signed into law in 2010. WakeMed also saw a significant hit when a large group of cardiologists shifted to Rex Healthcare. The pandemic presented another major challenge with worker shortages and increased supply costs straining WakeMed's financial resources. "Part of the reason you become financially strong is for rainy days, and I don't think of more rainy a day than a once-in-a-century pandemic," Gintzig said. "So we spent that money to make sure people got the care that they need." Rebuilding WakeMed's financial resources is one of Gintzig's top priorities. The health system reported income of $11.2 million from operations during fiscal year 2024. WakeMed previously reported losses of $54.2 million and $108.8 million in 2023 and 2022, respectively, according to WakeMed's latest annual financial report. WakeMed has improved financially as worker shortages have eased and supply costs have dropped. As WakeMed rebuilds its financial resources, the health system is also trying to identify where to make investments to meet the needs of a fast-growing region. "The big challenge right now is, how do you make people healthier? How do you lower the cost of doing that?" Gintzig said. "How do you really focus on the impacts we can make today, but more? How do you prevent the things that we all pay for tomorrow, whether it's mental health, whether it's physical health?" Growth plans. WakeMed is planning for what healthcare will look like over the next 10 or 15 years, Gintzig said. While this involves adding new hospital beds, Gintzig is also optimistic that more healthcare in the future will be done virtually in patients' homes or other settings that are less expensive than hospitals. "People are going to need to be in hospitals," Gintzig said, "but there's a lot that we can do outside of your typical inpatient setting as well. And so we're trying to balance all that and be reasonably strategic on what we put where to be able to meet those needs." Wake Med is in the early stages of planning major renovations at its main Raleigh campus. The health system also recently filed applications seeking to add more than 200 beds across multiple hospitals in Wake County. One of Wake Med's most advanced and largest projects involves developing a new medical campus in Garner that includes an acute care hospital and a 150-bed behavioral health facility. Bringing online much-needed behavioral health beds would free up beds at existing hospitals, helping Wake Med to meet the needs of a growing community, Ginsick said. The health system recently filed an application to increase the number of beds at the Garner Acute Care Hospital. In addition, Wake Med wants to add 164 acute care beds at its main Raleigh Hospital on New Bern Avenue and another 25 beds to a future tower in its Wake Med North Hospital. Wake Med is also developing more medical office buildings and other facilities to reach patients outside of hospitals. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services recently approved Wake Med's proposal to develop a new outpatient facility in Fuquay, Arena, totaling 25,000 square feet with a freestanding emergency department, diagnostic imaging, and laboratory services. This will become Wake Med's fifth healthplex and ninth emergency department in Wake County, following a similar facility that Wake Med opened in Wendell. "We built a freestanding emergency room in Wendell because there wasn't one," Ginzig said. "It's that balance. We try to identify what services we can put where people are that they need, and we try to plan for the future." Wake Med's future. As it grows, Wake Med is contending with challenges related to the sweeping tax and spending bill that President Donald Trump signed into law in July. That includes major changes to Medicaid that could see thousands of people in North Carolina lose access to health insurance. The cuts could undo the state's Medicaid expansion, which opened the program to more than 600,000 additional people. The state created the Healthcare Access and Stabilization Program, or HASP, H-A-S-P, to provide additional federal funding to hospitals that treat Medicaid patients. HASP has served as an important funding source over the past few years, helping health systems throughout the state financially recover following the pandemic. Hospitals in North Carolina received more than $4 billion in HASP payments in fiscal year 2024, according to data from the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. Wake Med, as a system, received $169.3 million. "We managed to survive without Medicaid expansion. We went through the pandemic," Ginsick said. "We've gone through every kind of change along those lines. Obviously, this bill and some of the changes are going to impact us, but at the same time, we'll be able to respond to those." As of June 30, Medicaid made up 22.1% of the health system's net payer mix through the first three quarters of fiscal year 2025, according to a financial filing tied to bonds Wake Med issued in 2019. Commercial made up the largest share at 46.5%, with Medicare and self-pay making up 28.2% and 3.2%, respectively. Ginsick said Wake Med can make up financial losses from Medicaid cuts by improving how the organization delivers care. "The opportunity is for us to get better at what we do, how we operate, and leverage the talent of our team to be better about getting care at the right place, at the right time, at the right cost," he said. Aside from these financial challenges, Wake Med is operating in a highly competitive healthcare landscape where consolidation is a constant theme. Longtime competitors Duke Health and UNC Health are investing heavily to expand in Wake County, while Novant Health is also trying to establish a foothold in the Triangle. Duke Health, Novant, and UNC Health in August all filed applications to develop some of the 267 hospital beds needed in Wake County. Wake Med's largest competitors in the Triangle are also navigating leadership changes. Dr. Wesley Burks is stepping down as CEO of UNC Health and becoming board chair of NC Children's. And Dr. Craig Albanese is leaving Duke Health for a leadership position at Kaiser Permanente. Ginsick said he's never been close to leaving Wake Med, despite being presented with opportunities to run larger health systems. Ginsick said he'll remain in his role as he continues to be impactful. "As long as I'm still providing value and impact and getting joy out of it, I've still got a few more miles on the tires," Ginsick said. And now we turn to the Biz column, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by Dane Huffman. Pomp, circumstance to flatten out in North Carolina. North Carolina is bucking a national trend on high school graduates, but barely. It's no secret North Carolina's population is getting older as people live longer and the state remains an appealing place to retire. But interesting numbers detail how the opposite end of the spectrum provides a daunting glimpse of changes ahead and how growth overall is not something North Carolina can take for granted. The Western Interstate Commission for Higher Education projects that 2025 was a peak year for high school graduates in the United States at 3.9 million. The commission expects high school graduates to decline steadily through 2041, hitting only 3.4 million in 2041. All this, of course, parallels a drop in live births. North Carolina will see high school graduations grow, but barely. In fact, projections show that in 2041, the state will only have 1,000 more high school graduates than in 2025. As Michael Klein, the state demographer, pointed out, this will create new challenges for post-secondary schools and programs after so many years of strong growth. The state is growing thanks to the fact that people are moving here, both from other states and other countries. In recent years, North Carolina has had roughly 121,000 births and 109,000 deaths on a given year, meaning the population grows by 12,000. But the real growth comes from people arriving from outside the state. In 2023 to 24, North Carolina added 82,000 people through domestic migration and 70,000 through international migration. Of course, all this could change as the federal government tightens immigration. North Carolina is not as dependent on immigration as Texas or Florida, but immigration is becoming more important for North Carolina's growth than in the past, Klein said. Lovers of modern homes converge at Raleigh Estate. Raleigh has always had a healthy dose of modern homes thanks to the influence of the School of Design at NC State University and a memorable visit from Frank Lloyd Wright in 1950. And those who love the sleek style will convene on October 11 for an annual fundraiser for the NC Modernist Group. And while the event isn't at one of those remaining homes from the 1950s, it is at the cool $12.5 million estate that Brad and Ekaterina Holton built in North Raleigh. The 17,000-square-foot home with 15-foot ceilings and soaring windows was completed in May of 2024. Tipsy Bull finally to open at New Durham location. A long-planned Triangle Sports Bar is finally about to open. The Tipsy Bull Sports Bar is scheduled to open this month at 800 Taylor Street in the Golden Belt campus. The venue promises food, craft beer, big screens, and a high-energy atmosphere. The bar previously hoped to open at a different location, as the TBJ reported in 2021. At that point, it would have been in a ground-level retail space at the Durham County Administration 2 building at 201 East Main Street. Preschool expanding to new Raleigh spot. A play-based preschool that's based on a Finnish model is adding space in Raleigh. Little by Little will move into a larger space next year as it relocates in a former church near the transfer food hall. The move doubles the size of the school, which focuses on children from ages 1.5 to 5. It also comes as downtown becomes much more of a place where people live. Co-founder Martina Esposito said, "This is going to fill an enormous need in the community." Esposito and Jessica Haynes launched Little by Little 8 years ago after working at Marble's Kids Museum. They traveled to Finland to see how preschools operate there and then incorporated that philosophy into their approach. "Countless studies show that children learn best when immersed in play and exploration," Haynes said. Little by Little will move from Pilot Mill into a new 6,100-square-foot space that can hold about 80 children. Applications are open for next year. And finally, First Citizens logo to be on Canes helmets. The Carolina Hurricanes have reached a deal with First Citizens Bank. The $200 billion bank will have its logo on the Canes helmets this season. The helmets were unveiled September 22 for the Canes' first preseason game against Tampa Bay. In a statement, Shan Teal, Regional Executive Vice President at First Citizens, said the partnership is a reflection not only of our shared passion for teamwork, but also underscores our shared support for the Raleigh community. Brand logos started appearing on NHL player helmets in 2021. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by Laura Onasorge. Delta to upgrade RDU New York service. Larger plane coming for flight to LaGuardia as Delta adds more seats. Raleigh-Durham International Airport's largest airline is upgrading its Big Apple service. Delta Airlines is in the process of upgrading some of its flights to mainline aircraft, and that includes one of its biggest local routes for business flyers, RDU, to LaGuardia. The New York flight is being upgraded to an Airbus A220 jet starting October 6. The move means 15% more seat capacity, adding about 80 seats each day. Delta operates two versions of the A220 aircraft with seating capacities of 109 and 130. Delta isn't upgrading every flight on the RDU route. Right now, it has seven daily flights between RDU and LGA. Three of those are being upgraded to mainline jets in October. According to Delta, the upgrade brings in planes equipped with its Delta First, Delta Comfort, and Delta Main cabins. A spokesperson for the airline described it as a routine move. Right now, the LGA flight is the only one it's upgrading at RDU. We are always looking at our network capacity and where we can adjust if demand is there, a spokesperson said. Through August, Delta and its regional affiliates had boarded more than 1.35 million passengers at RDU this year, up about 2% from the same period last year, according to RDU data. American Airlines and Frontier Airlines also serve RDU LGA, and there are plenty of options for business travelers as American, Delta, and JetBlue serve RDU New York Kennedy. And Delta, Spirit Lines, and United Airlines serve RDU Newark. There are also less congested options brought about by the budget carriers that have been growing at RDU. For example, both Breeze and Frontier fly to Islip in Long Island. The Delta move continues expansion for RDU to key markets, led by the recent Aer Lingus announcement that it will launch a direct flight to Dublin. And our next article is written by Lauren Onisorge in Hertford County. Manufacturer eyes NC for 800-job project. A manufacturing firm is eyeing Eastern North Carolina for an 835-job project, and tens of millions of state dollars could get it across the finish line. A steel company is considering Hertford County for a $974 million investment, according to a spending bill being pushed by state lawmakers. The latest iteration of House Bill 358 describes the unnamed company as a manufacturer of steel forgings and large diameter steel fabrications. One possibility is U.S. Forged Rings, which is identifying sites for a major plant on the East Coast. Early in 2024, U.S. Forged Rings announced it would invest $700 million in the U.S. offshore wind industry to construct a state-of-the-art tower fabrication facility and a steel forging plant. According to the bill, the state would allocate $51 million to reel in the firm, including $40 million in reimbursements for costs incurred to construct a publicly owned dock at the project site. Startup grows from $0 to $10 million in revenue. Seal the Seasons looks to make farm fresh food available year-round. This is also written by Lauren Onisorge. Seal the Seasons, and that's S-E-A-L, started a decade ago selling 2-pound bags of frozen berries. It was a college student's startup with a vision. Customers and consumers really want to support farmers and eat local food year-round, CEO Patrick Mateer told Triangle Business Journal in 2016. Now that statement has been validated by the $10 million in annual revenue the firm expects to see in 2025, and it has scored its biggest customer yet, Publix. The company began at UNC Chapel Hill with Mateer, whose experience at a Durham food nonprofit had him looking for ways to partner with farmers on year-round distribution of produce. The idea gained traction at UNC's entrepreneurship program. It became a full-time venture when he graduated. Today, it raised about $10 million in outside capital. And has six employees. Mateer credits the company's growth with steady drive and experimentation. Initially, Mateer's team packaged the produce, but it's learned to operate more efficiently, partnering with the farmers themselves who pack, store, and ship. Mateer has also taken the mantra of slow and steady. It starts small with just a few items at a store, then proves its concept through sales. That's how it won Publix, now its largest customer. If you're not doing $1 million in sales per item at Publix, you're on the chopping block, he said. The bags are making more than $1.1 million, he said, so the Florida-based grocer recently agreed to add two more products. The company's other retail partners include Wegmans, Harris Teeter, Sprouts, Whole Foods Market, and Ahold Delhaize. But it hasn't always been easy. Wage inflation in particular is top of mind. Labor has always been a farmer's number one challenge every year, Mateer said. Solar firm to slash over 500 jobs in tough time. for renewable energy. This article is written by Ben Tobin. More than 500 workers in North Carolina are set to lose their jobs as a solar company winds down operations. Blue Ridge Power, an engineering, procurement, and construction firm created by Asheville-based Pine Gate Renewables, is laying off 348 and 169 employees at facilities in Fayetteville and Asheville, respectively, according to Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification, or WARN, notices the company filed with the North Carolina Department of Commerce this month. Layoffs will occur before or on November 18. Kristen McKenzie, a spokeswoman for Pine Gate Renewables, said in a statement that Blue Ridge Power has experienced market headwinds similar to those impacting the entire renewable energy industry, requiring Pine Gate Renewables to dedicate significant resources to support the organization. After reviewing numerous options to find a path forward, Pine Gate made the difficult decision to conduct an orderly wind down of Blue Ridge Power, McKenzie said. In the WARN filings, David Sanders, president of Blue Ridge Power, said that over the past several months, the company has been impacted by factors beyond its control, including evolving regulatory and capital market environments that have affected many other companies in the renewable energy sector. While numerous options were evaluated in an effort to find a path forward for the company, including seeking additional financing, the challenges were significant, leaving no other choice but to proceed with conducting an orderly wind down of the business, Sanders said. Before and after President Donald Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill became law in July, groups have warned that clean energy projects and companies could take a hit. Pine Gate was founded in 2016. And our last top news story, written by Lauren Onasorge, owner of Historic Inn files Chapter 11 petition, inn dating to Van Buren administration, faces more financial challenges. The owner of a Hillsborough hotel that dates to the antebellum period has filed for bankruptcy reorganization. Allied DevCor, the Raleigh owner of the Colonial Inn in Hillsborough, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection this month. Joseph Frost, the attorney representing Allied DevCor LLC, said the reorganization will not affect the hotel's operations. The Colonial Inn has not filed bankruptcy and remains financially strong and will continue to provide accommodations and services to its guests and the community, he said in an email. The filing lists nearly $4.7 million in debts, while assets total just over $3.7 million. The largest claim comes from Celtic Bank, which holds a lien on the property. Its claim is listed as at $4.5 million, backed by collateral, valued at $3.6 million. Allied DevCor's largest shareholder is Justin Fevjar, now based in Arizona and co-founder of FDR Engineers, who owns nearly 33% of the company. Other stakeholders include fellow managers Philip Gocher, 29.5%, and Reem Darar, 15%. Fevjar could not be reached for comment. The bankruptcy filing coincides with the resignation of Elise Tyler, general manager, since the inn's renovation. Tyler, who holds a 7.3% stake, called resigning a difficult decision. She said in an email shared with town officials and made available to TBJ that she plans to pursue a new career path. Katie Farthing has stepped in as the hotel's new general manager. Tyler expressed confidence in the inn's future, writing, "As an ownership team, we are also bringing on the support of SNL Hospitality and Choice Hotels, who will serve to bolster the already incredible inn we know and love and keep every aspect of what makes the inn so special, unique, and perfectly Hillsborough." SNL began managing the inn as of September 12. The inn's website says the building dates to 1838 and was lovingly restored in 2020. Located at 153 West King Street, the Colonial Inn was previously owned by Francis Henry, who bought it at auction in 2001 for $440,000. Under his ownership, the property deteriorated and he sought to have it demolished. Instead, the town of Hillsborough filed an eminent domain case in 2014. At the time, the property was valued at $143,000, with renovation costs estimated at $3 million. A deal was reached in 2018 allowing Henry to sell the property to Allied DevCor. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter pages, beginning with Lauren Onasorge's page on transportation and finance. Aer Lingus sees room to grow. Direct flight to Dublin adds to RDU's growing list of international destinations. Aer Lingus has had the Triangle on its short list for years, said Donal Moriarty, Chief Corporate Affairs Officer for Ireland's flagship airline. Speaking after Aer Lingus announced plans for a flight between Raleigh-Durham International Airport in Dublin starting in April, Moriarty said in a recent fleet expansion finally made the route possible. The ingredients were already in place. 11 million people, that's very attractive, he said about North Carolina's growing population. Like Ireland, the Triangle boasts growing tech and life sciences sectors. Discussions about the RDU flight had stopped and started for years, but never gained traction. That changed with the fleet expansion. Aer Lingus acquired 8 A321 XLR aircraft, jets that fly 15% farther than the A321 long-range model. That opens up different destinations from the U.S., Moriarty said. Then came the incentives. RDU assembled a package that included a proposed $1.5 million from the General Assembly. Senate leader Phil Berger told TBJ he supports the funding, plus $300,000 pledged by local businesses. We're very excited about the market and hopeful it will be a success, Moriarty said. Aer Lingus has a track record of investing in its airport partners. Earlier this year, it launched service to Nashville, Tennessee, with 4 flights weekly. It also announced an increase to 5 flights with similar expansions in Indianapolis and Orlando. At RDU, Aer Lingus is starting strong with 5 flights a week. Last year, nearly 23,500 passengers traveled between RDU and Dublin, according to aviation tracker OAG, most connected through Iceland, Boston, or Philadelphia. John Grant, chief analyst at OAG, expects the new route to be heavily reliant on connecting traffic from U.S. domestic points. NC bankers expect rate cut to spark deal-making. Uncertainty has been the watchword for banks in 2025, but with the Federal Reserve's approval of a quarter-point cut on September 17 and the expectation of more to come, bankers are preparing for a jolt of energy in terms of deal-making. The softening job market had many experts predicting the cut. The 25-basis-point dip puts the Fed's target range at 4 to 4.25%. We just don't know how much potential business activity is sitting on the sidelines waiting for the cost of credit to come down, but we're going to find out, said Peter Gwaltney, CEO of the North Carolina Bankers Association. He expects the cut to spur activity in North Carolina and beyond, adding, "And I think that's what the Federal Reserve wants to see with the soft job numbers we've been seeing." Ron Day, CEO of First Carolina Bank, said his firm has had multiple deals waiting in the pipeline that are predicated on a falling rate environment. Those include self-storage construction, new apartment construction, and business equipment investment. This move was reassuring that we likely have entered a new period of easing that should build confidence and more activity, Day said. The latest jobs figure showed the U.S. economy added just 22,000 jobs in August. RDU confirms round of layoffs impacting 120. RTI confirms round of layoffs. RTI International has confirmed additional layoffs impacting 120 staff members, including 75 employees in North Carolina. The layoffs are effective October 1st. The Research Triangle Park nonprofit has had multiple rounds of layoffs in 2025, impacting hundreds of employees due to cuts in funding by the Trump administration. We're realigning our organization to lead with greater speed, enhanced collaboration, and tightened client focus, while ensuring that our scientific impact is amplified, CEO Tim Gable said in a statement. According to RTI, the latest reorganization will allow the firm to deliver science-based value while expanding into new opportunities and markets. It will also enable RTI to harness modern technology to increase its efficiency, according to the company. The disruption at RTI began in January when President Donald Trump signed an executive order freezing foreign aid. And finally, attorney accused of embezzling for personal account. A Triangle attorney is accused of funneling money into his own brokerage account instead of directing it to his client. Corey Kiger faces multiple counts of felony embezzlement and one felony count of exploiting an older adult, criminal charges stemming from a situation that has already led to litigation. James Maginot filed a lawsuit recently in Durham County against Kiger and others. Separately, the North Carolina State Bar filed for a temporary restraining order against Kiger. Mangino claims he had to sell the property on Gaston Manor Drive to pay for his wife's continued residence at a memory care facility, but after a deal was reached to sell the home for $775,000, he didn't receive the proper proceeds. And now we turn to Ben Tobin's page, Greater Triangle. Sanford offers up millions to lure Target. Growing town wants to add retailer to River Birch Shopping Center. A growing city in one of the Triangle's halo counties has approved incentives to lure a major national retailer. The Sanford City Council on September 16 approved $4.4 million worth of incentives for Ohio-based developer Casto to redevelop the blighted River Birch Shopping Center at 1033 Spring Lane. As part of the agreement, Casto must open a Target store in the development and a new-to-market regional grocery store within 5 years in order to receive the incentives. This would mark Minneapolis-based Target's first store in Sanford, a city in Lee County with more than 32,000 residents. Mayor Rebecca Wyoff-Salmon said during the meeting that people have been talking about the possibility of being able to attract retail of this caliber to our community since she first joined council in 2011. This is a game changer, Sanford Councilman Byron Buckle said during the meeting. Casto has said the project will consist of a roughly $64 million investment. The redevelopment of the River Birch Shopping Center, once a thriving retail hub for Sanford, has been discussed for years. In November 2022, Casto purchased the 35-acre shopping center for $10 million. The following year, Casto submitted plans to the Sanford-Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee that included demolition and replacement of most structures to include retail, offices, and multifamily. Casto's new plans only contain the commercial component. Jimmy Randolph, president and CEO of the public-private Sanford Area Growth Alliance, said during the meeting that the River Birch Shopping Center was once a prominent retail spot, but a change in ownership and the departure of many tenants has led to its decline. The blight that has affected that area has a very negative impact, and it has spilled over. We believe that the redevelopment of River Birch will reactivate that historically important retail node in a very positive way, Randolph said. The population of Sanford has surpassed 32,000 as the community between the Triangle and Sand Hills continues to add investments. The population was roughly 23,000 in the year 2000. Raleigh Group seeks 148 homes in Lee County. A Raleigh developer is pitching a new subdivision in Sanford. Greenhawk Development has filed plans with the Sanford-Lee County Broadway Technical Review Committee to build 148 single-family homes on 192 acres at 4220 Blacks Chapel Road. The land, owned by Lemon Family Limited Partnership, has an assessed value of $871,300. Jeremy Medlin, Executive Vice President of Real Estate for Greenhawk, said, "We are actively in Sanford already as owners and developers of the Morelli Project, a planned community off Broadway Road with around 400 homes." California firm snags Smithfield property. A growing fried chicken chain that opened in Smithfield last fall has caught the eye of a California buyer. Balboa Burbank, an LLC that shares an address with Moss Group, purchased the Slim Chickens location at 1311 North Brightleaf Boulevard in Smithfield for close to $4.2 million this month, according to Johnston County deed records. The 2,761-square-foot building and drive-through sit on 1.26 acres. Slim Chickens was founded in 2003 in Arkansas by childhood friends Greg Smart and Tom Gordon. And finally, in Johnston County, apartments on the rise in Selma. One of the hottest mixed-use developments in the Greater Triangle region is getting a residential component. The NRP Group, a developer and builder based out of Cleveland that specializes in multifamily housing, has begun construction on Eastfield Village, a 348-unit apartment complex in Selma in Johnston County. The project is part of Eastfield Crossing, the 435-acre development off Interstate 95 and U.S. Highway 70. A representative of the NRP group said the development costs for the project total around $73.4 million and that the group paid just shy of $7 million for the 14 acres the apartments will sit on at 131 Eastfield Village Court. The apartments will be spread across 12 garden-style buildings that will each be three stories tall. And now we turn to Kelly Thompson's page, Real Estate and Development. RTP Campus sells for $107 million. United Therapeutics snags space for future growth in the Triangle. A multi-billion dollar drug developer has expanded its footprint in Research Triangle Park by more than 400,000 square feet. United Therapeutics of Maryland paid $107 million for the five office and lab buildings in Research Commons RTP, according to Wake County Deed Records. The biotech company purchased the portfolio from New York-based Oxford Properties Group in a transaction at the end of July. The acquisition grows United's footprint in RTP to 1.4 million square feet. In 2021, Oxford paid $138 million for the campus at 79 TW Alexander Drive. At the time, it was 86% leased. For Q2 2025, TBJ Space publication reported the occupancy was 85%. Grifols, a global pharmaceutical and chemical manufacturer, is the largest tenant, occupying about 40% of the park. Two of the buildings are fully leased, 4101 and 4301 Research Commons, while the remaining three, 4201, 4401, and 4501 Research Commons, have varying amounts of space available. Altogether, the five buildings have 422,478 square feet of flex space, mostly built for life sciences companies. Combined, the buildings have an assessed value of $98.6 million. A spokesperson said United Therapeutics will be using some of the space for administrative functions and amenities. A year ago, United Therapeutics bought the biomanufacturing facility at 78 TW Alexander Drive for $33 million. Oxford Properties was the seller in that deal as well. That 95,000 square foot building was vacant, according to CBRE. United is also building a $500 million pharmaceutical production facility in RTP to manufacture Tyvaso DPI, a drug device combination product approved to treat pulmonary arterial hypertension and pulmonary hypertension associated with interstitial lung disease. Five building sale nets $190 million in Apex project. The first five buildings in the Apex Gateway development have been sold for an eye-popping price. Chicago-based JLL Income Property Trust acquired the buildings for $190 million, according to Chatham County Deed Records. The buildings are 87% occupied, with Life Science Logistics as the major tenant. Apex Gateway is located off Highway 64 west of Cary in Apex. The buildings are the first phase of the 380-acre commercial and industrial development by Beacon Partners. The five buildings sold total 985,000 square feet, have 32-foot clear heights and concrete truck courts with trailer parking. The sale adds fuel to the sizzling market for industrial and warehouse space, which has been a bright spot amid the broader headwinds facing commercial real estate given the shape of the office market. Sean Meehan, portfolio manager for JLL Income Property Trust, said the company first found out about the opportunity in May, and after visiting the site, they knew it was an investment the company couldn't pass up. One of the reasons why we were really drawn to this was we do think this is going to be the center of gravity in that South Wake submarket, Meehan said. And finally, lawsuit over 1,100 home project settled. A lawsuit over a 500-acre development in Durham has reached a settlement. In September 2023, Sound Rivers filed a federal lawsuit against Mungo Homes, claiming the home builder was violating environmental regulations during the site work and construction of its Sweetbriar development in East Durham. A settlement was reached on September 15, where Mungo Homes did not admit to any liability and wrongdoing on its part. Sweetbriar, when complete, will have 1,152 homes. Mungo Homes is owned by Clayton Properties Group, a division of Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. The settlement terms state that Mungo must take certain erosion control measures, pay fines, and help preserve 62 acres in the Lick Creek watershed. The erosion control measures are in response to Sound River's claim that Mungo was violating the Clean Water Act. Mungo Homes tried to have the lawsuit dismissed, but it was not granted. Mungo Homes must pay a civil penalty of $30,000 to the U.S. Treasury, pay $50,000 for part of Sound River's attorney fees and costs, and pay its own attorney fees and costs. The home builder also has to give $270,000 to the Triangle Land Conservancy, which will use the funds to purchase 62 acres of undeveloped land in the Lick Creek watershed for conservation purposes. And now we turn to our last reporter page, this one written by Kate Tracy, Retail and Restaurants. Couple buys Larry's Coffee in Raleigh. New owners have big plans for brand in Five Points neighborhood. A husband and wife duo has taken the helm of a longtime Raleigh coffee company amid a turbulent time for the industry. Larry's Coffee, located at 1507 Gavin Street, down a nondescript gravel road in Raleigh's Five Points neighborhood, is now under the ownership of Jessie Lotrecchiano and her husband, Sandro Neeson. The couple has big plans for Larry's, whose previous owner and founder, Larry Larson, operated it for more than 30 years. It's a little bit of a hidden gem. There's a lot of regulars that come in from the neighborhood, walk in, walk their dog in, or local people who order online and come and pick up, Lotrecchiano said. Financial details of the sale were not provided. Larry's was attractive to the couple because of the company's emphasis on sustainability, in addition to Larry's unpretentious feel for coffee. That's a quote. Its location in Five Points, with its proximity to Neuse River Brewing and Trophy Brewing's upcoming tap room, was a big draw as well. I was especially drawn to the relationships with the farmers that Larry had started, Lotrecchiano said. Lotrecchiano was born in New York but grew up in Raleigh and graduated from Appalachian State University. A decade ago, she moved back to New York where she met Neeson. The couple decided they wanted to live in Raleigh and were on the hunt for a business to buy. Lotrecchiano's professional background centers mostly around education. Neeson owned his own metalworking business. They moved to Raleigh in June and purchased the company in July from Larson, who was retiring. The transition comes as coffee prices have surged. The raw cost for Larry's Cowboy Blend was $3.70 per pound in August 2024. Now, Larry pays $5.87 per pound, with 40 cents of that going towards tariffs. Those prices have hit customers. A 12-ounce bag of beans increased from $17.50 to $22.50. North Hills adds private club with indoor golf. This is our final story. An out-of-state golf and social club is making its Raleigh debut. In-Town Golf Club, based in Atlanta, has signed a lease with Kane Realty Corporation for 13,000 square feet at 541 Church at North Hills Street, Suite 200 in the North Hills Innovation District. The private golf and social club will be located above the fitness studio, Home Turf, and will open next year. In-Town Golf Club has a sneak peek of the venue set up in the lobby of the building. Michael Williamson, co-founder and CEO of In-Town Golf Club, was attracted to the North Hills Innovation District for its mix of retail and office density. It's that great blend of office with great retail, other good restaurants, and it just seems like a lot of energy in that part of town, he said. The private club, which Williamson described as a Soho House social club with golf, will feature between 8 and 10 Trackman golf simulator bays. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we're going to go to the NC Business Minds page to read from the podcast about North Carolina Business Minds. And NC Business Minds is the name of the podcast. The business journals of the Triad, Triangle, and Charlotte have launched a podcast series to give you access to key leaders across the state and to equip you with business intelligence about the latest news and top trends in North Carolina. To subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And the headline on this podcast, her mission is to fuel North Carolina's growth. Kendall Bowman serves as the North Carolina president for Duke Energy. And this is written by Lauren Onisorge, or transcribed by Lauren Onisorge. Across the state of North Carolina, we're bringing you access to key business leaders and the top trends with the North Carolina Business Minds podcast. Here, Triangle Business Journal senior reporter Lauren Onisorge speaks with Kendall Bowman, North Carolina president for Duke Energy. Bowman grew up in Clarksville, Virginia, and her father was a farmer. After studying at the University of Virginia, Bowman enrolled in law school at Stetson University, planning to get into sports and entertainment law. But a summer job working for the Florida Power Company convinced her that working in utilities was her real calling. She's now the North Carolina president for Duke Energy at a time of rising opportunities and rising challenges as the state grows. How is Duke handling the demand for power from AI? It's pretty incredible. I would say 10 years ago, if we got a 10 megawatts industrial customer, we were thrilled. Now we're seeing customers asking for 1 gigawatt of power. Our Sharon Harris nuclear plant just down the road here is 1 gigawatt of power. So you're looking at a lot of power that's needed to drive this great artificial intelligence and data center growth. We're planning to add a lot of new resources to the system. We're already starting to clear land for a new hydrogen-capable natural gas facility up in Person County. We're also upgrading substations. We're upgrading transmission capacity lines to really be able to accommodate all of this growth. What about the controversies over building data centers? We're obligated to serve everybody, so when a potential customer comes to us, we do our best to try to figure out the timeline in which we think we can meet to serve their needs. But we do a lot of work. We have a whole team of economic development specialists here at Duke Energy. We partner a lot with local economic development, local chambers. We do a lot of work with the Economic Development Partnership here in North Carolina, led by Chris Chung. We partner with the local communities. Right now, energy is a hot commodity, so if you've got access, everybody's flocking to see if they can get it first. What happens if we don't build this infrastructure? That's a big, broader question potentially for policymakers and the local communities. I think it's great for North Carolina. We all utilize AI, whether or not you're on ChatGPT now. It's behind so many things going on. It's good for North Carolina. It's great for economic development. It doesn't necessarily require as many jobs, but some of the recent ones that we're seeing do employ a fair number of people. We need to be able to be a part of the mix. I don't want to see North Carolina get left behind. What do you do when it comes to clean tech renewable energy sources? North Carolina has been a leader, particularly in solar. I think at one point in time we were number two in the nation. We've fallen a little behind it, you know, and we're maybe number five depending upon what report you look at, but we're still seeing a lot of investment needed in solar. We also have a lot of hydro facilities here in North Carolina that I think people tend to forget about. I still see a strong need for renewables. We need a balanced mix of resources. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the viewpoint page where the Business Journal welcomes letters to the editor. And we have a column written by John Hood, John Locke Foundation board member here in Raleigh. The headline, North Carolina Needs More Savings. With the federal government running massive deficits, inflation still running ahead of the Federal Reserve's 2% annual target, the administration's mercurial trade policies generating significant uncertainty, and both business investment and consumer confidence trending in the wrong direction, now would be a good time for states and localities to re-examine their fiscal risk. Here in North Carolina, we're in fairly good shape, but we're not really where we need to be. If national or international actors blunder us into stagflation or even recession, other states are better positioned than we are to manage the consequences. Consider the latest general fund report from the state controller, Niels Roseland, published September 9. It summarized state reserves, expenditures, and financial reserves over the course of the previous fiscal year. From July 1, 2024 to June 30, 2025, the general fund ran a $3.3 billion surplus. At the start of the 2024 to 25 fiscal year, the state had an unreserved credit balance in the general fund of $2.1 billion. By June 30, it was about $5.4 billion. That's the credit balance plus the annual surplus. What happened to it? Well, some $891 million stayed put. The rest was spent on Hurricane Helene relief or transferred in compliance with state law to various other programmatic reserves and infrastructure accounts. Here's the bottom line. North Carolina currently has about $6.5 billion stowed away in our rainy day reserve or other accounts from which it would be easy to withdraw funds in an emergency. That represents about a fifth of annual general fund spending. Not bad. State savings have certainly been shrimpier, but in this respect, we are far from a national leader. According to the latest Pew Charitable Trust analysis, most states have a higher savings ratio. To compute it, they do roughly the same thing I did, add each state's formal cash reserve to each state's general fund balance, then they compare that number to annual expenditures. According to Pew's analysis, North Carolina could, if necessary, fund about 86 days worth of state spending from savings accounts. The median state could fund 104 days of spending. Georgia, 178 days. South Carolina, 161. Florida, 120. And Virginia, 94, are among those with stronger positions than ours. Since July 1, state government has been operating without a new budget for the 2025 to 2027 biennium. The North Carolina House and Senate failed to reach a comprehensive agreement on taxes and spending. Frustrating, to be sure, but a welcome side effect has been to accumulate more cash. Lawmakers still need to resolve the impasse, either comprehensively or through a series of mini budgets. Businesses and households also need clarity about North Carolina's future tax rates so they can plan accordingly. Still, if the General Assembly had fashioned a compromise in May or June before the Trump administration's tariffs were fully spelled out and before Congress passed a reconciliation bill with major changes to joint federal-state programs such as Medicaid, the resulting budget would now look rather out of date. Here's hoping that, however the impasse is resolved, lawmakers will include another hefty savings deposit just in case. Oh, now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the executive voice Q&A column, which actually is related to the cover story, focusing on Donald Gintzig. Closer look, title, President and CEO of WakeMed Health and Hospitals, born Iowa City, Iowa. Education, bachelor's, business administration, finance, and MBA, accounting, George Washington University. Family, wife Lynn, three daughters, Meredith, Annie, and Victoria, age 67. When Donald Gintzig retired from the Navy on September 30, 2013, he was shaking hands and thinking only of a long vacation when asked if he might be interested in WakeMed Health and Hospitals in Raleigh. Bill Atkinson had just resigned as CEO after deep financial troubles. A week later, WakeMed called Gintzig. He started October 23 and soon sparked a turnaround. What was the mood like at WakeMed when you arrived? It was like a bad country western song. Your dog died, your pickup truck broke down. But I didn't see that. People here felt it. They had a CEO change. I'm getting interviewed by the local newspaper on how's WakeMed going to survive? What are you going to do? But I said, we're going to be all right. As I walked around here, this place was amazing. The culture, the talent, the people. And we were going to be all right because we deliver great care. When did it turn around? I would say after we came up with our pyramid, which established its core values. We stole it from a hospital in Seattle, Virginia Mason Medical Center. It's our strategic plan, which is unique. Patients and family are at the top, the mission, vision, values, and then all the different aspirations. There are a lot of folks that talk about mission. We live it, and there aren't many places that you'll have one of the wealthiest people in North Carolina in one room, and in a room right next door, same care team, same kind of room, somebody with very little to their name and out of places. What's the key conflict you face now? The vast majority of what we take care of is preventable, if we are able to intervene ahead of time. We have a model that still is around sick care versus health care, but we're moving more toward health care. And I'm very proud of the fact that for the last 13 years, we're the healthiest county in North Carolina. Our concerns are even in the healthiest county in North Carolina, we have disparity. If you're an African-American male living in Wake County, you'll live 8 years less than a non-African-American male 4 miles away in a different census tract. How will the new North Carolina Children's Hospital impact WakeMed? We take care of a lot of babies because we deliver a lot of babies. We deliver, I think, 2 to 3 times the number of babies than all of Duke Health. We deliver 10,000 babies a year. They're not going to do that. They're not going to take care of the neonatal care that they need. We do have pediatricians and a pediatric ICU and those sorts of things, but it's not 150 beds. It's 35 or 40 beds. So will this community benefit? Will the state of North Carolina benefit from it? Yes. What we have been able to do is attract some amazing specialists. We've got as good a pediatric surgical group as you'll find anywhere. My only question was spending the state's treasure in the most efficient and effective way. Any concerns about the investment in that hospital? The state's been a great supporter of WakeMed, and obviously they're a very big supporter of UNC. As you know, Duke has more money than the state of North Carolina, so whether that needs to be a part of it or not, smiles. We want to invest in where things need investment. We want to improve health, and how do you balance all those things together? North Carolina is an amazing state. We'll figure out some way to do all of it. How do you want to be remembered? If I retired tomorrow, I would hope and pray that they wouldn't say, well, during Gintzig's reign, they added $200 million to the balance sheet. I hope they'd say that we've helped make this community healthier. And this was written by Dane Huffman. And in our remaining time with the Triangle Business Journal, we'll turn to the 52 Shades of Success, the Impact of AI, column written by Connie Gentry. The headline, A Smarter Approach to Hearing Loss, Artificial Intelligence is Reshaping Hearing Aid Technology by Fine-Tuning Sounds and Discounting Noise More Effectively. A rock star, a dentist, and a factory worker join a military veteran, a bartender, and an elementary school teacher in an audiologist's waiting room. As varied as their career paths, they share a common work-related risk. All are apt to develop noise-induced hearing loss, or NIHL. The Centers for Disease Control estimates roughly 22 million Americans are exposed to potentially damaging noise at work each year. Shelley Cristobal, audiologist and owner of Hearing Healthcare Services in Durham, works with a wide spectrum of patients. These include adults with acquired hearing loss that's worsened over time, folks with auditory processing disorders where the hearing issues are more neurological, patients whose hearing loss follows a chronic disease or traumatic injury, and children with congenital hearing loss. Hearing aids are certainly the bulk of what we do because that's what most people need, but we also work with cochlear implants if people need to move on to that higher level of support for their hearing, said Cristobal, who's seen technology evolve dramatically across her 20 years in practice, most notably with the advent of artificial intelligence to improve hearing aid performance. However, the introduction of AI wasn't an overnight phenomenon. AI was a big improvement, but it wasn't a gigantic leap for us because we've had all of these different algorithms developing and gradually improving over time, she said. For instance, one of the key measurements being considered in the evaluation of effective hearing aid devices is the signal-to-noise ratio, or SNR. It's how much the hearing aid can separate out the signal, what you want to hear, over the noise, which is everything else. Back 10 or 11 years ago, we were getting a 6 or 7 decibel separation with that signal-to-noise ratio, Cristobal explained. As technology evolved, the algorithm showed gradual improvement and took the SNR to about an 8 decibel boost. Now with AI, the SNR goes from about an 8 decibel boost to an 11 decibel boost. Imagine having a TV remote that could adjust the noise around you in a restaurant. With AI, you could take the noise down 11 clicks in that most aggressive setting as opposed to being able to take it down 8 clicks, Cristobal said. For somebody with hearing loss who deals with a lot of sound distortion and struggles significantly with background noise, that's a big improvement. Most hearing losses don't just make everything softer sounding, they introduce a lot of distortion to the pathway between the ear and the brain, so when you get into those noisy environments, the noise gets in the way much more for someone with hearing loss than for someone without, Cristobal said. When I put folks who've been wearing four-year-old hearing aids into these new AI-based ones, it makes a world of difference in their ability to go out to dinner with friends or go to a book club. More than 50 million Americans, an estimated 1 in 7 people, have some degree of hearing loss, according to the Hearing Loss Association of America. And hearing loss is the third most common chronic physical condition. Compared with the hearing device technology of the 90s, which was entirely pre-digital, Cristobal recalls, she was using teeny screwdrivers to set the hearing aids and make sounds louder or softer, higher or lower pitch. Today's AI-based options are incredibly complex. And we're going to stop there with this article. The remaining parts of the article discuss AI improving improving her work. And we're going to stop there, but we would like to mention that today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties, with its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina. Highwoods, our real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. And as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal, be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. Again, I'm Derek Frost, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.